Today on Piano Jazz, we remember trumpeter, educator, and NEA jazz master Clark Derry, a close friend of Marion McPartland. In his formative years, Clark got one of the best educations one can get, performing with the Ellington Orchestra and the Basie Band. His career spanned more than 70 years. He passed away in February 2015 at age 94. Marion was fortunate to have him as her guest on Piano Jazz in 1994, and we join them now.
How are you?
Fine, man. Good to see you.
I think maybe the place where I first met you, I think, the High Note in Chicago.
Right.
Remember that club?
Oh, I sure do.
Jimmy and I were working there.
Yeah.
And you must have been somewhere else in town. You came in.
Yeah.
And I think we were playing with Anita O'Day.
And the tune that you were playing at the time was called The Black Cat. And Jimmy announced it, and he continued to repeat it. I suppose he did this on all occasions when he announced his tune. But I was a little bit paranoid because I was entering, and as I was approaching the front, he said, "Here he comes now. He's coming closer."
Oh, God, so many things I want to ask you about. I never did know where you were from originally. You weren't from Chicago.
St. Louis is my home, yeah. I was born in St. Louis.
It's as long as I've known you, you've always been one of the great players, but how did you get started playing?
I started out in St. Louis. My oldest sister, Ada, was married to Cy McField, who was the top tuba player at that time. You know, there was no such thing as a string bass. The tuba played the walking bass line.
Oh, that's right.
That's it. Boom, 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 boom. Right, yeah. So Cy was playing with a band in the area known as Dewey Jackson's Musical Ambassadors. And they used to rehearse at various homes of various members in the orchestra. And when I was allowed to go to listen to them, if I were a good boy, I used to enjoy it very much. And one of the guys was I was just a sort of a pre-teenager then. And one of the guys owned a candy store, and he used to bring me my favorite pieces of candy, caramel and Mary Janes. They still make them, don't they? Mary Janes. That's the one with the little taffy.
I don't know.
With the peanut butter inside.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it was really good. So by him being so nice to me, him being a trumpet player, I became very closely attracted to the trumpet. Yeah.
So then did the family, did they get you a horn of your own?
Eventually, the neighbors chipped in and bought me a horn because I had made one. I couldn't afford one, so I wanted to play one. I made one out of an old garden hose, a discarded garden hose, and I put a old kerosene funnel at the end of it and bound it up in three places so it looked like three valves on a trumpet with a piece of lead pipe on the other end for a mouthpiece, and I made lots of noise.
I've never heard of such a thing, but that's pretty inventive. Could you actually blow notes?
Could make noise, lots of noise. But there was a method to my madness. The neighbors got sick of me playing that lousy-sounding thing, so they chipped in, and they came up with $12.50 and bought me a horn from a pawn shop.
Oh, my God. So that's how you got started.
That was my first horn.
Well, did you ever take lessons, or were you just a natural?
No, I never did. Well, couldn't afford it, Marion. My dad was a father of 11 kids, and it was just kind of a difficult chore for him to feed us, clothe us, and keep a roof over our heads.
My goodness.
So taking trumpet lessons was definitely out of the question.
So you really had to fend for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Ask a lot of questions, got a lot of wrong answers. I got to tell you, there's one wrong answer that I got once. I used to ask a lot of people questions, and this one old gentleman, I asked how to improve my tone in the lower register, and he said, "Son, you got a mirror at home?" I said, "Yes, sir." "Well, you go home, you sit in front of that mirror when you practice, and you grit your teeth, and you wiggle your left ear, not the right ear, but the left ear." Now, you know that's nothing that's going to help. Well, I'm naive, and I go home and I try this. Didn't help, except that when I'd go somewhere for it to play, people would say, "Did you see that kid wiggle his left ear?"
But do you know what? I guess this is how people really make it is that they're so determined to do something.
Yeah.
You know, if you had not been that determined and that much of a musician, I guess you would just have said, oh, well, I can't handle this, and you would have become a ball player or something.
Yeah.
Thank God you didn't. Well, let's before we go on, let's play something.
All right.
Well, you brought me this tune, and it's called The Snapper. This is one of your tunes.
Yeah?
Great title.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
All right.
That's because I'm an ichthyologist, and being involved with the fish, I happened to pick that one as the name for my favorite type of fish.
I see.
Red snapper. You know.
I'm writing that all down.
You're writing it down?
Yes,
okay.
Sure.
I'm going to ask questions later.
Well, the first gigs you did, were they with a big band, or did somebody?
Well, the first gigs I did around my hometown, St. Louis, was with small groups. There were a lot of guys who came up the river from Mississippi on the Streckford steamers, and most of them would get off in St. Louis because it's a very luring city. It had lots of things to lure the people off the boats from New Orleans. There was great cooking. There was beautiful girls and. The booze is reasonably priced.
But now, after a while, chronologically, I don't know what you did first. You went with Duke Ellington after a while.
Yeah.
Of course, you left St.
Well, first I was with Basie.
Oh, okay.
And we were Basie's big band. Then Basie broke up the big band and started a small band to work himself out of a bit of a debt that he'd gotten into. With the ponies.
He was sort of known for that, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, what a beautiful man he was.
Sure was.
And then I was scouted by the Ellington clan while I was with Basie to join the Ellington band, which I did. And I feel very proud to have been a person who was able to garner up a good friendship with these two guys and to work in their bands.
Boy, well, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
And... you know, we should do a Duke Ellington tune. We've just been talking about him so much. Well, what would you like to do?
One of my favorites is Come Sunday.
Great. All right, let's do that.
All right.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you play with it.
Right.
Pretty tone. All right, let's see now. This is in
B flat, I think. Is that a good key? In B flat.
When did he write that? How long ago?
You know, I don't really recall how far back that goes, but it's one of his all-time greats, and it's beautiful. I love it.
Boy, it sure is. God, imagine sitting there for all these years and getting to...
every time I see you, I think about, aside from the fact that you're a marvelous piano player, you write some great tunes, too, you know, and one comes to mind. I'd love to hear you play that. There'll be other times... I love that too.
Really? I didn't know you knew that too.
Oh, yeah. I asked you for a copy of it once. You sent it to me, and I don't know what happened to it. I don't know if somebody absconded with it. And I used to play it, and I'd like to ask you for another copy.
So God, I'd be thrilled to hear you play, but meanwhile, I'll be glad to play it for you, sure.
Would you?
Sure. All right. It's funny because this was written at the Hickory House. I don't know what the circumstances were, but this tune just fell together. It's sort of like a minor. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I won't talk about it. I'll just play it.
All right.
Here goes. Okay.
Man, that was so beautifully played, and the tune itself is just a gorgeous tune. And I remember when we used to do it on The Tonight Show, Doc did a marvelous solo on it, and somebody had written a marvelous, just straight-ahead, beautiful arrangement on it. And
It's funny, that was Bob Haggart, I think.
Was it?
And yeah. I was so thrilled to have that played by Doc and the band. And, of course, that's the time you were in the band.
Yeah,
so
it was a good band. I enjoyed it.
You got to play. And then... isn't that where you originated your famous singing of mumbles?
Yeah, mumbles. Yes, it is.
How did you ever think of a thing like
that? Well, actually, it began back. It was sort of a put on of the old singers back in my hometown in St. Louis. Every other block, there was a place of refreshment, the den of iniquity, whatever you want to call it. But there was a place where people would go and have a beer. And beer was a nickel a dipper in those days, and they served it in big tin pails, pitchers, you know. And every one of those joints had a pianist who played on an upright piano, which was triply laminated to withstand the weight of several stands of beer. And if you bought the piano player a beer, you could sing, and it didn't matter how horribly you might have sounded or whatever it was that you wanted to sing about. After the first couple of measures, it was highly unintelligible anyhow. And the most important thing was that the fun and the merriment was all over the place, and most of them had sawdust on the floor. And after the piano player made your introduction, which was usually in F sharp or one of the raised keys, because it was easier for them. They didn't even know it was difficult in those days.
F sharp. And they had the jar on the piano to put the tips in.
Right, yeah, the kitty.
Oh, God, the kitty, yeah. Oh, my
God. And the sawdust would bounce off the floor, and many times you would start singing about the way you want your eggs. I want my eggs, and I'm all. By the time it gets to that second statement, nobody cares less about what you're singing about or how you wanted your eggs. You didn't even care if you got any eggs.
Well, did you get up and sing, or were you just imitating
these
people?
No, I just happened to be there. But this was on the Tonight Show. This is my opportunity to try that which I had heard all through these years. So Johnny would say, let's play this little game called Stump the Band. You know, they used to play that.
Oh, yeah,
which
right.
simply meant that somebody in the audience would suggest a tune. Which was usually a Girl Scout campfire song from 1812.
Right.
And whenever I was called on to solve the mystery tune, it was my opportunity to use this thing which I had observed in St. Louis, which we ended up calling mumbles.
Well, all right, let's do it. Let's all do right. it so everybody knows what we're talking about. Those those few that don't, most of us do.
She did she born the home table to live up. She'll do ill table to let do believe.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, Tune in next week to your NPR station or stream the program online at pianojazz.npr.org. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. You may enjoy another of our productions, Song Travels with Michael Feinstein. Check out the podcast. Subscribe at itunes.com/songtravels. She's on the lamb, she be on the level. She keep on the lamb on the bound of the lamb.